Yeah, I mean, you know, our job is to continue to win series, whether it's, I keep saying it, they're big league teams, they're big league players, you know, anybody can beat you any day, you know. So we didn't do that this series, and we got to move on. We got a game tomorrow against the Cardinals and then move on to the next series. So we just got to turn the page.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, August the 5th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to an early Monday morning edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Mets finishing a little late on the West Coast. Losing to the Angels, another stub-your-toe series. I come to you here, and I figured I'd do a Monday morning State of the Union on this edition of the show. Of course, I had just come to you a few days earlier, post trade deadline analysis, and the Mets go right back at it. And, you know, you're going to go and hear tons of different takes today. Most are going to be outrage and anger, rightfully so. And we talked about this right after the All-Star break when the Mets came out, and that was a four-game set. But Mets lost 2 out of 3 over a weekend coming out of the All-Star break to the Miami Marlins. I called it a stub-your-toe series, said Mets really can't have too many of these at this time of the year. Of course, the talk then and the talk throughout a good chunk of mid to late June into July was, well, what can the Mets do to improve the roster? What can they do to get better? And really, after the horrible May, I mean, that the OMG, the grimace, all that stuff, that's the fun in the games and what have you. But now we're in a different phase of the baseball season. This is the getting it done phase. All the stuff that you talk about during the offseason, all the stuff that you talk about in spring training and then at the beginning of the season, and then, of course, as you lead up to the trade deadline, none of that matters anymore. There's no more, well, the Mets could do this, and we're going to talk about, and I know it's going to come up. It's going to come up today, Pete Alonso's contract, and the Mets need a starter, and Stearns needs to do this in the offseason. And you're going to hear all that throughout the next couple of months when the Mets don't give the fans what they want. So you hear a lot of screaming, yelling, the Mets need to do this, Stearns should have did this, Stearns should have not invested in the team, whatever it may be. That doesn't matter now. Stearns invested in the team, and the Mets have an opportunity to make the postseason in a muck that's not quite widening yet, but you're starting to see a demarcation line. You're starting to see teams play at a higher level, like Arizona, like San Diego, and even Atlanta. I know they had a rough time with the Marlins, but even Atlanta over the weekend, you're starting to see those teams play at a higher level. So consequently, the Mets are going to have to play at a higher level. And quite honestly, they didn't do that this weekend. So you could sit here and yell and scream and get all angry and start talking about what this team needs or what they don't have, and that would be wholly unproductive. What I'd rather do, and really, and I thought about this after the game, I'm like, what really needs to happen here? We know they need to win ball games, but really, what are the keys to the rest of the season? And I think you saw, as I was going through the weekend, as I was, I watched all three games, and quite honestly, they weren't all that impressive on Friday night either. Blackburn had an incredibly good outing. The bullpen did just enough. I mean, Blackburn had an outing that you would have expected from somebody who's been below league average. A week earlier, had given up 4 runs in 5 innings to Anaheim. Blackburn had the kind of outing that you'd expect the Houston Astros to pluck a guy off of another team and have that. So that was a positive way to start the weekend. But they didn't play great. They didn't hit the tar out of the ball that night on Friday. And they should have probably won that game 10 or 11-1. They should have won that going away, and they didn't. And then you know what happened Saturday night with the Brazenban and the blown save. And then, of course, the frustrating offensive situations of Sunday afternoon into early Sunday evening. And away you go. The Mets have lost 2 out of 3 here. But really, what needs to change? It's not just like, oh, they need to hit better. They can't blow saves. We know that. What needs to change to make this thing continue to go in the right direction? Because we talked about it. I mean, today against St. Louis, this afternoon, the little pit stop, the makeup for a rainout back in May, which let's look at, you know, looking back when the Mets were playing so poorly in May, I know they did rather well against St. Louis in St. Louis. It was probably a good thing that at that point the Mets got the game rained out. But now it poses a problem. And then they go on to Colorado and they go on to Seattle. You saw Philadelphia have a problem in Seattle this past weekend. And let's face it, Colorado actually played San Diego tough on the road. And you got to think they're going to be that much tougher at home. I mean, it's that crazy ballpark. But where it really gets problematic or challenging now for the Mets is that really right now there are 4 things I looked at that are important and have to go in a positive manner. There really is no margin of error on these things. And out of the 4 things, 3 of them are kind of an evolving situation. And the other one is far more complex when it comes to long and short-term discussion and why that's happening. So I'll get into that. But where I'll start, and this is the one thing that I think Stearns was honest about throughout the year, and he's proven to be able to be somewhat adept at having success this amongst what I would say is the chaos, and that's the bullpen. And the bullpen has been a topic of conversation for a while. The bullpen has been awful for a good chunk of the year. I think the biggest thing I could say about, and this team in general, and the bullpen is symptomatic of this team, and this thing has driven me crazy all year, but it's the amount of walks that this staff gives up. It's the amount of walks this bullpen gives up. And this weekend, the weekend turned because of a bad pitch by Brazenban, but a walk was involved in that. And generally, bad command was part of that. But Stearns has talked about the bullpen being this fungible thing. He said, I think during the winter, at the very beginning of the spring, the bullpen you have on opening day is not necessarily the bullpen you'll have throughout the year. Bullpens change throughout a season. And we get it. Guys that you thought were going to have good years aren't. Injuries. It's not Stearns' fault that Raley went down. It's not Stearns' fault that Nunez went down or Drew Smith was out for the year because of elbow surgery. The Diekman stunk. And by the way, Jorge Lopez, who stunk here, he didn't really stink here. He just had one bad day. Has a 0.66 ERA in Chicago. I think the optionability of some of the arms created challenges early on. I don't think he would have wanted to get rid of Michael Tonkin. I know Michael Tonkin had a couple of rough outings early, but the optionability, needing arms, that was part of it. I thought they gave up a little bit too soon on Johan Ramirez, and I think that's where I'm going here. That's where I think that I'm going. And I'm going that direction because being in a situation where they want the bullpen to be fungible, where you have, and you need these optionable guys the Mets really didn't have. They still haven't shown that they could get optionable guys that are effective out of their own farm system. They're getting guys off of waivers, signing scrap heap in the offseason. And the thing is that because you've built the bullpen that's meant to be fungible, you're now in a situation where you're rebuilding or finding out what guys have in August. We know Brazenban's going to be asked to get big outs, but is he the 7th inning guy? Can he move up into a more significant role? Can he back up closer for Diaz? We don't know. One of the big concerns I had, and I had outlined with Brazenban, is he goes from older prospect, has played his whole career in front of no fans in Miami. Yeah, I know they made the postseason last year. Way different making the postseason in Miami on a surprise team than coming here to New York in the bright lights with this demanding fan base. And, you know, guess what? His first big opportunity to get big outs, he gives up a 3-run bomb to Neto. And there you go. So normally you would say, hey, if this is April, this is May, you know, let's see what Brazenban has, put him in the 7th. You have, you know, Maton has shown that he can get big outs and he can be a possibly a solution late in the ball game. Adovino's still kind of, okay, who am I? He's never really had the kind of role that at this point he disappointed you. He's not the guy that you could count on like Buck did a couple of years ago in the eighth inning. So he's been floating around. We know how good Buto is. And the problem with Buto is he's going to be like Seth Lugo, a starter that's converted to a reliever. So, you know, what happens? What kind of situations do you plug him in? Because he's not going to be available for a couple of days. You plug him in situations that are only multiple innings if he can't be available the next day. You're asking a lot of this manager, Carlos Mendoza, who I think has had the complete right mindset going into this trip, downplaying the trip, telling the media, hey, look, we're big leaguers. This is no big deal, the travel, because I'm making a big deal. Everybody's making a big deal about the travel. You heard coming in the clip, turned the page, but you're asking a lot out of him. A team that has played tremendous clip of one-run games, has been tremendously successful in one-run games, just lost back-to-back one-run games because the bullpen is a critical part of their daily success. And in one of those games, his new reliever, a guy that has good peripheral numbers, seems to have good stuff, he put him in a big spot, and he found out something about him. Is that command an anomaly? We don't know, because we have to see him again in a big spot. And you have to hope that he could get a big out. And these are things that you don't want to be doing on August 5th. These are things you don't want to be doing going into a big pit stop against the Cardinals, a big game. You could take the season series, help yourself with some tiebreakers. A struggling team, the Cardinals, that was beat up a little bit by the Cubs. And we're doing this in August. And I think that's the part of bullpens. And I could give him a pass this year because with the way that the luxury tax has been going and the need for some fiscal responsibility, he couldn't go out and justify giving $15 million a year for a setup man. But I think one of the things that Stearns has to think about going forward and with some of the money that's allocated on this team is at least give yourself, yeah, you had the closer coming back from surgery and he was a given, but you knew there might be a little bit of a ramp-up time. His season's been wild. But giving yourself some certainty in the eighth inning or even the seventh inning and maybe play around with some of the variability with the earlier innings. And then if those guys become bigger pieces, there you go. And I know you're always going to get the Ryan Stanics and you're going to try to go out and get a nice pen arm at the deadline. I get that. But I think Stanick, Maton, now Brazenbaum, these are guys that are finding their way in with this team and are going to be part of getting critical outs, if not nightly, three times out of 5 days. You have, hopefully Nunez gets back and is healthy. He's going to make things better. But he's a kid going down the stretch in a big spot. There's variability with him too. And think about that. Young player being thrust into a big spot. Keep that trend in mind because I'm not done here. I'm not spending the whole show here, the whole State of the Union here, talking about the bullpen. So this whole thing with the bullpen, Mendoza has to figure this out now and fast. The sitting back and saying, well, let's see what Brazenbaum has. Because you could have made the argument they could have pulled him. And maybe he would have pulled him if he knew a little more about him before the Neto home run. Because his command was off the whole inning, even when he had two outs and nobody on, before the hit and the walk. So now you're incorporating a young guy, a couple of young guys, a converted starter, some guys from other teams. You got the closer who all you could do, you know the bullpen. The closer ultimately is going to be who's going to decide and end it. We've talked about that already. We don't need to get into that. But the bridge now has been built and rebuilt and built again. And either it's going to work now or not. And Mendoza now has to make sure that bridge is stable, so that nobody walks across it and falls. And right now, he can't say that. So you're asking him to do that in the midst of this crazy road trip. Now you talk about the young component of this roster. Remember, a large part of the Mets' success has been done by guys being here for the first time. Yeah, you've got Alonso and J.D. Martinez and Brandon Nimmo. McNeil, the core players, Lindor. We get that. Those are your core veteran stars. But two guys that have been important and are part of the reason why the Mets are here and not deadline sellers are Alvarez and Vientos. Now, in the case of Alvarez, quietly, or maybe not so quietly, people will start talking about it. He's had a 352 OPS since the All-Star break. He's hitting about a 111, 120, somewhere around there. And there's been talk that there's been some injuries with his shoulder. We know what happened with the ligament. So just he came back quick from that. There could be lasting effects. But if you're out there, no excuses. I'm sure Alvarez would say the same thing. So maybe the injuries are playing into it. But yesterday, his at-bats were poor. His blocking pitches behind the plate was atrocious. I didn't realize how bad statistically that metric that he's been at. Sometimes that's pitch calling and calling pitches in certain situations. It sounds like some of that is his desire to frame, which he needs to start to figure out if he's going to balance that out. But all I know is this. If Alvarez, who, like I said, is hitting a buck 20 since the All-Star break, is going to hit like this for an extended period, that's going to put some strain on the lineup. Remember, Bader's not expected to even hit at the level he's hitting. It's highly likely that he'll go into the tank at some point a little bit offensively or slump. Tyrone Taylor is a backup outfielder. I know that, you know, Jesse Winkert's here. He's the righty component. That will change when Marte comes back, but you got a couple of holes there. If Alvarez is a hole, now 30-year lineup is a hole. You're asking a kid who admittedly has shown some great leadership qualities to now, in the deep end of the season, work his way out of a slump, continue to manage a pitching staff, and he's done a great job with that at an elite level, and maybe work on some small defensive things. That his inability to block pitches is going to, and could have, I mean, they didn't get a big hit. I know it cost them a run yesterday. But it's going to be a bigger deal if it continues, especially because it may change pitch calling with runners on base. And you know how that could play into some bad outcomes. And you put Vientos right now. Vientos amazingly has not slumped all year. And that's what scares me. Because you know he's due for a slump. You know he's due for a 2-for-25 stretch. Every player gets one of those. If he could go through the year without that, you know what? Put that one in the books because, hey, Mark, that's not going to happen again. That double play was a rally killer. He missed some pitches to hit on that at-bat. I think that's where the at-bat was lost, was before that double play. There were some pitches he should have driven that he normally drives and he didn't. And that's where I started to think, well, hey, long road trip, long season. It's been a wild season for Vientos. Here he is now in the deep end of the pool as a big leaguer, team playing for the postseason, expectations, brutal, brutal schedule, dog days of August. His defense has always been, even though he's improved, that's not the biggest part of his game. So he's got a hit in order to justify staying in the lineup. And if he goes into a protracted slump, with Alvarez trying to figure things out, yeah, I get it. You're supposed to have your Lindor, your McNeil, your Nimmo, your Pete. But you need these two kids to hit. And realistically, early 20s, both of these kids. You know, Alvarez, 22. Vientos is, how old is Vientos? Vientos is 24. They're experiencing things for the first time. And they're being asked to be really good without a margin of error at a time of the year where, you know, they've never really been before. So we have to remember the Mets are basically banking their season on a lot of ifs. They've been doing that since Stearns took over last October. They created their own ifs because of the way they went about building their bullpen. Alvarez, this was his, you know, second full year. So he's got a little bit more experience. Vientos, you didn't know what you were going to get out of him. He could have very easily been down in Syracuse all year as a 4A, grousing, hoping to get his next big league opportunity as much as he's here playing third base. Let's face it, Brett Beatty gave him this opportunity. If Brett Beatty played somewhat decent, not even hit much better, somewhat decent, competently, they may never have given Vientos the shot. And now you're asking them to be really good for the first time in a pennant race. Alvarez wasn't here. I mean, Alvarez came up when they were playing the Braves down the stretch a couple of years, but he was a bench player. There was nothing there that, and really, he wasn't part of that. Last year, he was hurt. You know, he was hurt a little bit, came up late, and then they had no pennant race. And now this year. So think about it. You got a bullpen that you're trying to figure out here in August. You got two young, key young players that are asked to produce and be core contributors who haven't really been here before. And then you get to the, well, I call it, and I know I've been criticizing him on X, the $30 million a year question. The big free agent, the guy who hired the best agent as of today in the history of baseball. Maybe 20 years from now, it'll be somebody else. But at the end of the day, a pioneer, the best agent in baseball, when you hire him, you're sending a message that you want to be the man. You want to be the big contract guy. You want to get your fair share. And that's Scott Boras and Pete Alonso. And I think when Alonso hired Boras, the statement that made put a bit of a bullseye on his back with not only the Mets, the entire league. You know, Alonso's a guy that, let's face it, since the day he came into the league, he's been a personality. I mean, he stormed onto the sport with over 50 home runs his rookie year. Home run derby, put himself out there with his gregarious personality. But when you hire Boras, you don't have to have a gregarious personality or even say a word to tell the world what you're expecting or what you're trying to do. And here it is his walk year. And I don't care what numbers you cite to me that say, hey, it's not the worst year of Pete Alonso's career. I'll take away the pandemic season. You could point to, well, he's better here than this. He was worse this last year. And I could really say, what did he hire him right after 2022? Alonso. Alonso really hasn't been great the last year and three quarters. But I'll just stick with this year just for argument's sake. You don't make that hire. You don't do what Pete Alonso did. And then you go out there and you hit 202 with runners in scoring position, which is what Pete Alonso was hitting going into last night's action with runners in scoring position. Flailing away in big spots, not moving the runner over. Now, admittedly, he's been a lot better since the All-Star break. And even the other day, I was watching him. And I'm like, well, he's going the other way a little bit more. He seems like he's obviously had the big home run on Friday. But it's more than just that big home run. It's more than just feeling good that he's starting to go the other way a little bit, like during 2022 when you thought he was turning the corner as a hitter. You have to consistently be the guy that they can count on to execute. I'm not saying he always has to hit a home run or get a big hit to execute in RBI situations. Pete as an offensive player, and really Pete as a player in general, if he's not driving in runs, and part of that is hitting home runs, he's really not a valuable player. He's not defensively, I mean, he's not bad defensively, but he's not Christian Walker defensively. He's not a guy that's going to run the bases at a high level or bring speed to the game. So he's not bringing a glove. He's not bringing speed to the game. He's not an average hitter. He's not a guy you're going to ask to move runners along, you know, bat second in the lineup, kind of work counts and stuff like that. He's a guy that you put in the middle of the lineup to hit home runs and drive in runs. And sometimes that's with sacrifice flies. That's with... And I know that this has always been this debate with sabermetrics that RBIs or clutch hitting, you know, RBIs are random, clutch hitting is not a thing. But there are certain guys, and Pete throughout his career has been a guy that really you could count on for north, a good chunk north of 100 in a full season. And this year, I mean, maybe he gets to 100 with a big down the stretch. He's got about 5-6 weeks left. But he's not good with runners in scoring position. With two outs, he's worse. He had opportunities yesterday to get a couple of runs in. Not even getting a hit. Just some simple execution on one of them. And he couldn't get the job done. And look, we'll debate the contract and what he's worth. We've talked about that. You could argue, with this historic seller's deadline, the Mets could have made some hay. That's not when you're an organization where the Mets are with Cohen and you're in a pennant race, you got to go for it. They didn't harm their long-term chances, in my opinion, by not trading Pete, not doing some stuff. Because I'm not so sure the historic seller's market is always going to come the Mets' way for political reasons. I don't think the league is so eager to help Cohen's Mets in the same manner that they would trade away to other teams. I think the price is always higher. And when it's the other side, the wallet's stuck in the back pocket. But let's not get too deep into it. The bottom line is Pete Alonso, and this is a guy that's been there before. It's not like Alvarez and Vientos. Pete Alonso has to be great down the stretch, not just for a contract, but because the Mets will not get to where they need to get this year, regardless of the other things we talked about falling into place, if the version of Pete Alonso that we've seen pretty much the whole year doesn't revert back to the Pete Alonso of 2022. The guy that was the core hub, the core run producer in the middle of the lineup. And I don't know if it's the agent thing, the contract thing, New York thing, wanting to be here, the uncertainty of his career because he doesn't have a contract. It could be all sorts of things. When you brought Boris on, you asked for it. You don't bring Boris on and not ask for that. And that's okay. He has every right to want to leverage his payday. But now, when the team really needs you, you're hitting 202 at runners in scoring position. And I could forgive. Look at Jeff McNeil. He's a perfect example. You could forgive what happened the first, 5 months of the season, 4.5 months of the season, if you move forward and perform at norms. McNeil has done that and then some in the last month. Pete could still salvage the season. Shoot, he could be bad the rest of August and the Mets hang around. He has a big September. I guarantee you everybody will forget the first 5 months. But unlike Alvarez and Vientos, if they don't figure things out, it's damaging. It's difficult for the Mets. But other guys could step up. And the bullpen, I think, that's more of a chemistry experiment. With Pete, it has to happen. It's more definitive. Either he's going to be good or he's not. He's in the middle of the lineup. He's batting fourth. And J.D. Martinez, as much of a professional hitter and great hitter he's been throughout his career, he's also a lot older. You had to expect a certain regression and decline. You can't ask Lindor. I know he had a horrible April. But Lindor has done everything offensively he can to be that guy. Nimmo, I know he's not having a typical Nimmo year. I think for him, it's also been leadoff guy, middle of the order. Now he's kind of settled into this number two role, whether that's his new role the rest of his career or just this year because of how Lindor was hitting remains to be seen. But remember, Nimmo's expected to set the table. Still walking. He's still getting on base. He's still doing Nimmo things. I think a lot of ways taking him out of the leadoff spot, putting him into run-producing positions has maybe changed his game a little bit. I'm not saying he's a worse player, but it's changed his game a little bit. The key is Pete Alonso. And today, when you're watching the game in St. Louis and it's a tight ball game and it's the sixth inning and it's second and third one out and he's up, he's got to get a fly ball. You'd love for him to get the big base hit up the middle to drive in two. You'd love for him to crack a three-run homer to break the game. But at the very least, a run producer gets that fly ball. Knows that in those spots, that's where things have to change. Can't just be the same Pete Alonso. You have to be the best Pete Alonso. And that's how $30 million a year ball players get paid. That's how players in this town become legends. You don't have to be a Hall of Famer. You don't have to be Derek Jeter all the time. You could be Tino Martinez. You could be Scott Brosius. You could be all sorts of other big-time names. Edgardo Alfonso, really good player. Because in the spot they were, that key contributor in the lineup, they came through all the time. Alfonso was a guy that was known to always have the best at-bat when the stakes were the highest. You don't want me to use Yankees references? Piazza, the same thing. He knew, hey, runner on third, one out, I got to find a way to make contact. I don't have to hit the ball 600 feet. Today, I know the game and Instagram and all this stuff and, you know, all the things that go into being paid and popular. I know it's different. But at the end, the spot that Alonso's in the lineup is simple. You're paid big money to hit home runs, which he's starting to do again. And those do come in bunches and those can be streaky. But most importantly, what's much more impressive to me is the base hit the other way to drive in two with two outs. Not so much the 500-foot home run. And the latter is always going to be there. But the former, the big base hit up the middle, has been lacking. And it's getting late early, to quote Yogi Berra. It's August 5th. And I will tell you, if the bullpen figures itself out and Alvarez returns to normal form and Vientos doesn't have a slump, the Mets are in a good spot. But I promise you, just like Diaz is the linchpin in the bullpen, you really, everything could figure itself out. If Diaz does it, then all I talked about is not, you know, doesn't matter. Pete is that to the offense. He's Diaz to the offense. It has to happen. They can't hide him. They hid McNeil for a big chunk of the year. They were able to give J.D. Martinez time to get into game shape after a late signing. They could survive the slumps of Lindor and Nimmo as they normalize. They can't survive the heart and soul, the run producer in the middle of their order being anything but that. And Pete Alonso is not consistently that. And he's got to become consistently that. He needs to have a late year like Piazza did in 98 down the stretch. And maybe he's not going to hit 400, but he needs to be really, really good. Because if he's not, all the rest's not going to matter. It really is interesting how the Mets season comes down to two or three guys just figuring out how to be who they are. Diaz, Pete. And in the midst of all this, you've got rebuilding the bullpen multiple times. You've got young players going where they have not gone before. And I'll tell you what, you got to give Mendoza a ton of credit. Here he is learning stuff himself. And he's doing it with a level of confidence. This challenge is being thrown on him by the way the roster was built. You really can't complain about Mendoza. So the Mets are in, you know, maybe they're in St. Louis by now. Hopefully their flight didn't get delayed. And then they head to Colorado and then they finish up in Seattle. Critical week. They're a game out of the last spot by one game in the loss column, game and a half overall. They're making up that half a game a little bit today, I'm sure, on some teams. And you got yourself 6 weeks left. Really damaging stub-your-toe weekend. I mean, could have picked up on the Braves. I mean, they really could have swept the Angels. They swept the Angels, we would have had a whole different conversation today. And that's how funny baseball is. But the keys would have been the same, because if they had swept the Angels, you'd had more answers about your bullpen, and possibly you wouldn't be as concerned about Vientos. But the reality is, all those things I talked about, the keys for the rest of the season, what the season's going to come down to, with all the uncertainty that is part of what the 2024 Mets were going to be from day one. It's old reliable that really needs to step up, and that's Pete Alonso. It's amazing how much this comes down to him. And what a, I mean, he's not A-Rod in the negative sense, but he is, and Lindor is kind of that. But he's in a lot of ways, because Lindor has normalized himself and really shown the fans a lot this year with the way he's played. He's put himself more on that radar of, hey, Pete, it's time for you to step up. as Lindor kind of slides off of it. That's interesting. And maybe, look, there's always ways. It could always switch. Pete has a big September. Lindor goes into the tank and has a slump. It could always be that. So, anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this Monday edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And, of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcast Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast later this week. Till then, take care, everybody.